to the Legal Digest podcast, and this episode is the season finale. On today's episode, it will just be me, but I'm going to be answering listener questions that were sent through, doing a recap of this season, and let you know what will come in season two, which I'm really looking forward to. So season one has been really successful, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in each week, especially people from other parts of the world. I'm really happy that what we talk about resonates with you. In season one, we explored lots of different discussions, I think, of the current issues in the legal industry. We've heard from people at all levels, paralegals, but law students, but also some really experienced and knowledgeable guests in not just the legal industry, but the health and wellness space, HR and finance. Season two is going to further explore workplace issues, careers, but also wellness, because I believe that lawyers still need to find ways to get better at having a healthier lifestyle and finding that work-life balance. I also wanted to thank those of you that reached out on social media and email with your questions, which I'm going to answer now. So the first question is, I want to become a lawyer, but I don't know where to start. Do you have any advice? So this will really depend on where you're at with your studies and whether you want to be a solicitor or a barrister. So the role lawyer is a general term for someone that is qualified to give legal advice. If you want to become a solicitor in the UK, then you can do a law degree or another degree and then do the SQE 1 and 2. And you have to have qualifying work experience. So that means getting it with a law firm or an in-house legal department. And that has to be recorded and signed off by a supervisor. If you want to be a barrister, then I believe the route is pretty much the same as and hasn't changed. So you can do a law degree, then the BPTC, and then pupillage, which is the practical training to qualify. If you do another degree, you would also need to do the GDL, then do the BPTC, and then pupillage. Now, which route you take really depends on the type of law that you want to practice. Do you want to be in court or more of a corporate or commercial lawyer working for a law firm? Or do you want to work in-house within different sectors? If you're not sure, then I think finding out what might suit your personality best. So, for example, are you the sort of person that really values work-life balance? If so, then you should take that into account and research the areas of law. So earlier in season one, I released an episode with Robin DeMare, where he said that one of the reasons for going into IP law is the work-life balance and the diversity of people working within that area, because he was someone that came from very diverse background and lived in different countries and now living in London. So speaking to people across different practice areas and trying to get some work experience and even attending webinars, which are for qualified lawyers, so you can see how it really is in practice and then being able to make a decision. The next question is, I see from your social media account that you worked in-house and that you trained in-house. So how can I get an in-house training contract? So yes, I started working as paralegal in-house, and this developed into a training contract. Once you become part of the team and people feel they can really rely on you, you're more likely to progress within that team to trainee, and then from there to progress to NQ. Don't be afraid to say, you know, at the interview stage, because I think sometimes we often feel that we're reaching too high when we first start in a new place. But I would say it's good to show them that you're ambitious, but also that you're willing to stay long term if they offer you that progression. You can also apply directly. So some in-house firms, they advertise training contracts. And if you do get an interview, I publish some tips on how to ace that training contract interview. And I will put a link to that in this episode's description. So the next question is, I want to work abroad remotely for a few months, but my employer says we can't do that for more than 3 weeks. Is there any way that I could still do this? I can see that you're doing this and working remotely abroad. So firstly, it depends on what your employment contract says. So are you in the office full-time, hybrid or remote? So to work abroad remotely, ideally, you should have a remote employment contract. If you are at interview stage, I would be really open with them and say what it is you want to do. Say that you want to work remotely and you will want to be spending time abroad. I have met people that were not open about it, and eventually their employer did discover that they were in a different location, because most people will have to sign into a VPN for the company that they're working for, and that can bring up security alerts to the IT team. So this is exactly what happened with this person, and they were then asked to confirm that they were actually in that location And turned out, you know, it all turned out fine in the end, but it's better to be open about this and not lie about where you are, because you could actually be posing other risks to your employer. There could be things that your employer has to comply with that they need to be prepared for. The second thing is, if they agree, explain, if they agree to let you work on that basis, explain how it's going to work, what time zone you'll be working on, whether you'll be subject to income tax in that country, your working setup. And so you basically need to reassure them that you have it worked out and that you understand that you'll still be able to do the job to their expectations as though you were working remotely in the UK. The third thing is tax. So getting independent tax advice, I would recommend, because some locations will say that you have to pay tax in that country, even though you're paying tax in your home country. So, I mean, unless there are double taxation treaties, there could be also income tax thresholds as well as separate reporting requirements. So it's always good to get advice from an expert on this matter. Fourth thing is visas. So you can check this online, do some research, find out how long you can stay there and what documents you need. There are quite a few countries now that offer digital nomad visas. So Mauritius offers one, they call it premium visa, Malta, Italy, Spain. So there's lots of information online about how you can take advantage of those. Out here, as I said, they call it a premium visa. So you can apply for 1 year and it's renewable. You don't have to leave the country to reapply, but you do need an income, I think, of around £1,500, which I think is probably not as high as some other countries in Europe or the Caribbean. So the fifth thing to check is living costs. So check this out, see how much it's really going to cost you to live there. Are you going to need a car to get around? Is it the kind of place that has really good public transport? So take all these things into account and then you'll be able to present to your employer how you plan to be able to work whilst living abroad. I spoke to Rachel Martin in episode 3 about exactly this subject. So listen to that if you're looking for more detail on tax implications of working abroad remotely. She also gives some tips on other things related to this in the episode. But myself, I work on a UK time zone and it's a 3-hour time difference here. So I have my mornings free, but I work slightly later into the evening. So that works for me. It might not work for some other people. So that's something else to consider if you're thinking of going to America. I think they're actually 7 or 8 hours behind in some states. So that would mean waking up at 3 a.m. or something like that to work. So it's always good to think about these things first before you decide to go to a new place, and also, you know, be able to know what it's really going to be like to live there day to day. The next question is, can I work as a freelance or legal consultant if I have less than 3 years experience? So I would say yes, but it depends on the agency that you sign up with. But they should be able to find new roles that are suitable for your experience level. There are a few companies like this popping up now. So after, you know, doing some research online, you are probably likely to find a few that offer something for your level. Some do stipulate that you have to have at least 2 years PQE, but I know that there are a couple, at least two, that say that isn't a requirement. So it's always worth, you know, looking into it and seeing what your options are. So the next question is, do you ever get anxious about doing calls online? And if so, how do you deal with it? Yes, definitely. I mean, I've experienced this, and even at the start of my career before I even started working from home, you know, I would get anxious about having to discuss things in meetings, especially when you're kind of let loose on projects and you have to be the spokesperson for the legal team. It's quite a big thing when you're junior. It is a bit like public speaking, and I think it's normal to feel nervous about that. If you're in person speaking in front of a large group, then I think not focusing on the way that your voice sounds really helps, because we often over-criticize ourselves and focus on everything except what we're talking to the audience about. There's also something else which I tried, which is called hypopressive breathing. And it's kind of a set of exercises that really brings your heart rate down and calms your internal nervous system. So if you're someone that experiences a very fast heart rate and all the classic symptoms of nervousness before speaking in front of a large audience, then you might find that trying this breathing exercise actually works. It's an Ayurvedic method. If you look online, you'll find lots of information about it. But it's something that's really helped me in not just speaking in front of lots of people, but in other things as well, where you're feeling a bit anxious. If you're speaking on a virtual call, then, you know, that can still be nerve-wracking, especially if it's in front of a lot of people. But I think using the same tactics that I just set out, and also not looking at yourself in the camera or other people, because that can be very distracting and you can end up losing your train of thought and what it is that you're there to actually talk about. So that's all for the listener questions. Thank you so much for tuning in each week. I'm going to be taking a few weeks off, but I will be back with season 2 very soon. And if you want to know when season 2 will be launching, then do follow us on social media, as it will be announced there in due course. Make sure to follow us on social media at The Legal Digest on Instagram, and you can also go to the website thelegaldigest.co.uk, and over there you can listen to all the episodes of season 1, and you can also listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.